Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at rt.ie and 1857 15 815. Frank, are you there? You're on my screen. Frank Dempsey and Meath.
Yes, indeed.
Okay,
I am,
vaccines.
Joe,
yep. Let's go straight into Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly said yesterday this weekend everyone over 85 would be vaccinated. What age is your aunt?
My aunt is 98 years of age. She'll be 99 in September, Joe.
Congratulations. And Frank, when was she hoping to be done? She's not done for a start.
No, she's not done for a start, along with a lot of other over 85s that I've discovered around the Trim area. And I'm sure I think it's happening further afield. The 11th, no blame at all, Joe, would be placed on the GP in this state. I think it's the logistics of the HSE that's part of the problem. On the 11th of April, called to know if she wished to do it, mm-hmm. or to have the vaccine. And the instruction was that was fine, she did want to do it, and that she would be vaccinated on Thursday the 18th. On the Wednesday...
No, hang on, Thursday the 18th of February?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And on the Wednesday, we were told basically that we'll give you a ring with a time for to call for
yeah.
the vaccination.
Okay.
And on the Wednesday then, when contact was made with the surgery, they were just in the process of ringing all their over 85s to inform them that there was no vaccinations taking place tomorrow, Thursday, the 18th of February, because we haven't had any delivery.
Okay, so where do we stand today?
Well, you stand today, again, I spoke with the practice manager this morning, and they were had half fingers crossed that they would get a delivery this morning, but no
didn't
delivery
matter.
This morning.
Dr. Bernie White is in Dublin. Frank is in Meath. Dr. White, good afternoon to you. You're a GP in a primary care centre. Over 85s, all of them vaccinated by this weekend. What's it looking like for you, Bernie?
Good afternoon to you, yeah. Joe. We were due to get... We had vaccinated our over 85s 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Today, we would have been vaccinating the 80 to 85-year-old group. And we put in our order form, we followed all the mm-hmm. rules, and we were told on Friday we probably wouldn't get our vaccines. And on Monday we were told that our order was not processed and we had to ring all 100 plus patients and tell them that they wouldn't be getting their vaccines today.
Wow. And how much notice did you get that your order didn't get into the system?
We were actually only told for definite on Monday,
okay.
and we were due to vaccinate today.
So you had to phone 100 people yesterday and say, sorry.
We're very sorry. Some of whom, whose children had taken days off work and made arrangements, and people made arrangements to travel with permission, you know, to take their parents for the vaccine.
And people were so are so excited about the vaccine.
Oh, absolutely! And
they get very excited when the powers that be go on radio and they're on radio nonstop, which is brilliant in terms of communication. But they keep telling us, as of yesterday, the Minister of Health told us that all the 85s will be vaccinated by this weekend. But that's not what we're hearing. What we're hearing. So why build up hope in people? Because you know, Bernie, more so than I do, I know anecdotally, that when people hear that they're going for the vaccine, they're over the moon. They're over the moon.
Absolutely. They're really excited. They've been looking forward to for months. And it is very disappointing for them and for us because we understand how disappointed they are.
Now, are they saying, when you say your order wasn't received...
It was received, sorry. It wasn't processed. In other words, they received the order,
yeah,
but they didn't pass it on to whoever was delivering it. Or the, as the previous caller said, it's a logistical problem, I think.
So they're not saying we don't have the supply?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, well, the incredible thing, sorry
Frank,
for...
Frank, yes,
for,
Frank, yeah.
Yeah, from coming across here is... the incredible thing was in the town of Trim, there are three practices, GP practices, and there's no question but they're all very well organised, because the other two practices have got their over 85 vaccinations done, I understand. The incredible thing is that one of those practices, the entrance is in a hallway on the left-hand side, and the practice where my aunt was supposed to get held is directly almost opposite that, and one surgery got their supply and the other surgery didn't get the supply. My mother is 95, Joe, out about 13 miles from Trim. There's a surgery, a practice out there, Dr. McNamara. My mother, at 95, was told last week that she would be vaccinated yesterday at 1:20. She was in Longwood at the surgery and she got vaccinated. But there's a much deeper thing here that I think needs to be taken cognizance of. Not only are those over 85s not being vaccinated at this stage, and we're now into March, it does mean that every delay there is, everybody else in every category are being pushed back a fortnight. So effectively, someone over 70 who was hoping at this stage, perhaps this week, to be getting maybe their injection, or somebody over 75 in the practices that we're talking about, they're not going to get it. They're being pushed back as well.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Because I remember somebody who was, I think, in their 60s, late 60s, telling me that they looked up the grid that Junior Minister Oisín Smith put up, the Green Party minister. And according to that grid, he's told me he would be done by the end of March. There is no hope in hell.
It'll
be done by June at this stage, at the earliest. Dr. Paul Moriarty. Paul, good afternoon. I know you're a consultant, but you wanted to become a vaccinator.
That's right, Joe, yes.
And you were told no.
Well, I went to Dublin Volunteers.
Okay.
I was trying to volunteer my services, and they gave me a schedule of education required to become a vaccinator, which I followed, which was about 15 hours of online education. And then two practical classes for anaphylaxis and basic life support. Mine had lapsed because I'd retired 18 months ago, so they all had to be redone. I re-registered with the medical council. Mm-hmm. I was GARDA vetted, and then I talked to the HR people in the community health Area 6 to see if they'd take me on as a vaccinator in their program. And they were delighted to put me on their books until my application went to the HR department. And they said, because I was over 70, I'm 71, that I wasn't eligible to be employed by the HSE, as all over 70s were considered highly vulnerable and should be shielding. But at this stage, I've been vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm fit, healthy, and ready to go, basically.
But as you know, well, in life, there's no actuarial 100%, and the Pfizer isn't. They don't. They say it's negligible, but not 100%.
Well, exactly. And I, as a doctor,
effective.
I'm prepared to take the risk and to go ahead and to do whatever I can to help release the younger frontline staff who should be doing more acute work.
Yeah. Very good point. Very good point. And Frank and Paul, did you retire at 70, or you had to retire, or?
I retired at 70.
Okay. And how long had you been? You're an eye surgeon or an eye consultant?
Yeah, I've been in the eye and ear and the University Hospital in Tallaght from 1983.
Wow.
And then I became the medical director in the eye and ear, and I became the CEO until I was 70.
And one of the best hospitals in the country, the eye and ear.
Well,
in terms of reputation.
We like to think so, and the patients seem to agree on all the feedback studies we've done.
An incredible hospital. Of all the years I've been on Liveline, well, not that many, but all the years I've been on Liveline, Paul, of all the hospitals we got complaints about, now I know it varies from year to year, A&E, I don't think we ever got a complaint about the eye and ear hospital.
I think its community relations are excellent. But I mean, the other point I'd like to make is that the organisations like Dublin Volunteers and Medical Council are putting out requests for people to re-engage and come back and become vaccinators, but nowhere does it stipulate that you're not allowed if you're over 70. And that means people could go through quite a lot of effort to fulfill the educational requirements and then find their kick to touch by this rule that came out in 2020. And the rule seems to be before the vaccination program. So whether anybody's going to look at it again or reassess this rule, I don't know. It seems to come... Sorry, Joe?
I was just going to ask the question. I mean, if that is the case, then there are a lot of GPs in this country who are still practicing, who are ineligible to be vaccinated, and yet they're vaccinating. So we're getting tied up in knots here, and that's ageism of the highest order.
But we need supply.
Well, I agree.
Yeah, I need supply. And Paul, what was your speciality in?
I was an ophthalmic surgeon, eye surgeon.
And did you
with an interest in cancer work around the eye?
Wow. And how many years' experience did you have of that?
Well, as a consultant since 1983.
Yeah.
So you can do the arithmetic on that. And I suppose I was in training for 7 years before that.
And were you replaced, Paul? Sorry, I know you're irreplaceable, but were you replaced, Paul?
Oh, I was, yeah. I was replaced by one of my own trainees.
Okay. I just think your experience, your skill, your knowledge.
I also understand whatever risk is out there, so I don't see what the block is to people like me taking on a relatively small role as a vaccinator. The big thing I see is, apart from service to the community, is actually to free up the staff who would be otherwise engaged. I mean, the big problem, if you talk to any of the HR people in the hospitals, are staff rosters at the moment.
And have you been in touch with the Eye and Ear Hospital in terms of, obviously, our outpatient clinics, I don't expect you to be a spokesperson, Paul, but I presume eye work is extraordinarily difficult with an infection like COVID.
Well, it is, and the volumes going through the outpatients at the moment, I believe from talking to the matron in the Eye and Ear the other day, are down to about 60% of the normal volumes.
Okay.
But there has been a huge increase in telemedicine and telephone triage of patients before they come in, and so their appointments can be scheduled so that there's no failing the COVID regulations. And that seems to be working very well, as far as I can tell. But obviously, I'm not clinically involved anymore in the Eye and Ear. So, as you said, that's my opinion. I'm not an official spokesman for the Eye and Ear.
And do you have to retire from private work?
No. I could still be working in private practice.
Yeah.
But I just decided it's better to go before you start going downhill.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Well, 70 is young these days, but. It doesn't. Not that I can judge over the phone line, but you don't sound as if you've gone downhill, Paul. The opposite.
I'm still working in an advisory capacity to the Island East Group on integrated eye services with the community and the hospital. So that work continues on as well at the moment.
Okay. Incredible. The only complaint we ever got about the Eye and Ear, Paul, was that it's a beautiful building, people don't know it, off Adelaide Road and on Adelaide Road in Dublin. It's a magnificent Victorian building, red brick. One night, a group of lads who were over from Liverpool on a stag party mistook the Eye and Ear Hospital for their hotel and tried to get in at 2 o'clock in the morning and couldn't understand why the poor porter, was trying to explain, this is not your hotel, lads, your hotel is somewhere else. But anyway,
the bar is closed.
Okay, Bernie, Annie, do you get any word today, Dr. White?
No word at the moment.
Okay. Frank, well, we'll keep our ear out for it and see are the promises that are being made, are they being kept? Today is Wednesday, we were told 85-year-olds plus. But as Frank points out, this is, a lot of people under the impression the 65-year-olds plus will be done by the end of March. There isn't a hope in hell, but we understand that's down to supply.
One of probably the most annoying things, like, for the like of my aunt, 98-year-old aunt, is you watch bulletins and you see the Minister for Health and you see the CEO of the HSE making these, if you like, fake promises that this will be done. And the excuses they use, we're not talking about a place that's in rural Ireland that is isolated or anything. We're talking about one of the main towns in the county of Meath, and the logistically I can understand vaccines, like, you know, when you get them, you deliver them. But the vaccines have obviously been there, but they're just not being delivered. They can't get the logistics right in a town like Trim. I would not like to be living away in rural Ireland, depending on what's happening.
Okay. And Dr. Moriarty, are you following the issue of supply? Because there's a major feature in one of the newspapers today about Denmark, same population as Ireland. Their care homes were told were all covered 7 weeks ago, fewer deaths. They actually bought extra vaccines and obtained all of Germany's unused vaccines with no objection from the EU. Yet we're told we have to slavishly follow and stick with the EU, or else we'll be steamrolled if we try and go on our own.
Joe, I have no information on that. I'm sorry. I would be just an opinion, which is probably not very effective.
Okay. We have a 98-year-old, I'm told. 98-year-old is Frank's aunt, and she's 99. She's still waiting on the vaccine. Okay, thanks. Thanks indeed, Dr. Paul Moriarty. Thank you for your service, Paul. It's an incredible skill you have, an incredible experience, and everyone in the Eye and Ear Hospital. Thank you so much.
I mean, my only request is that the people in the HSC either review the policy or they put a statement out to say if you are over 70, you're definitely not eligible, so people just don't waste their time.
And I shouldn't be saying thank you for your service, because you still want to be of service with your qualifications, and hopefully that will happen. That's Dr. Paul Moriarty, consultant, retired in the Eye and Ear Hospital. Siobhan O'Connell, Siobhan, your mother was due to get the vaccine this morning.
She was due to get it at 10:20 this morning.
And can I ask what age she is?
And she's 87.
So she's one of those who the Minister for Health promised that would be done by this weekend. So what happened?
So she was ready this morning. Her friend was collecting her at 5 to 10. And she got a phone call at 5 to 10 to say from the doctor, sorry, the vaccine didn't arrive. So as you can imagine, my mum was really upset. She's 87.
25 minutes.
She wants to live her life. She wants to get out there. She's been stuck in for a year, basically.
Yeah.
And she's been living for this. And it didn't happen.
And
unfortunately, the doctor doesn't know when he'll get the vaccine.
My God.
Just that it didn't arrive.
Yeah, okay.
It's happening everywhere, When a surgery doesn't get a delivery, Joe, it's not just one 98-year-old that doesn't get the vaccination. It's everybody over 85
that's on
that doctor's books.
Okay, good evening, Margaret. Frank, keep in touch. Siobhan, keep in touch. Please do. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
The name of Father Joseph Marmion is all over the media in the last 24 hours. The Jesuit organization in Ireland released his name. He's deceased. He died at the turn of the century, and said he had abused boys in Belvedere, among other colleges, both physically and mentally and sexually. And it was a pretty categorical statement. Unusual in that the order released his name, even though he is dead, and positively, as has been remarked elsewhere, they're calling on victims of Father Joseph Marmion to come forward. But however, in doing it this way, people hear the name Father Joseph Marmion, and if people know Father Joseph Marmion, they might get mixed up, because there is another, and in fact we think there's two, Father Joseph Marmions in Ireland, and both of them, this one we're about to talk about, he died at the turn of the century, 1998 as well. Alexis Marmion is the brother of Father Joseph Marmion. Alexis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And when did you realise your brother, a priest, deceased, might be confused with the priest who of the same name who's now all over the media?
Well, I just saw the Father Marmion that's been under the spotlight now at the moment. I just saw that on 5:30 news yesterday evening.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first I knew of it. And I suppose it is an unusual name, but the one thing about it is the priest on their investigation is a Jesuit. My late brother Joe was a secular priest. He worked in, he was ordained for the Diocese of Montana in 1962, he spent 35 years out there. He died suddenly in 1998. So here he was at home on holidays in Lockridge, said 10 o'clock mass and got a massive heart attack after and passed away.
And are you worried that his name might be confused? There might be confusion.
Well, I'm not really worried, to be honest about it, because people who would know, who would have known Joe, would have known that he was never a Jesuit. He never taught or worked in this okay. country. And he, as I said, he spent 35 years in Montana. But people, I suppose people that wouldn't have known us and might know mm-hmm. some of the family and say, I wonder, is that man a relation of so-and-so? Which could be a little bit embarrassing, to say the least of it.
But yourself and your sister had a conversation last night, and you were worried about it.
Well, that's right. She was wondering, should we go to, or should she go to Facebook? She's on Facebook quite a bit, and we decided not anyhow. And
okay.
I see my niece has something up on Facebook saying that he's not a member of our family.
And you want to make that clear as
I
well?
I want to make that quite clear. Okay. Joe's, as I said, he's died. He's buried here in Lockrey.
It's a very, Marmion is, well, maybe it's an unusual surname. And the fact that both of them were priests and both of them died, your brother died in 1998 in Ireland, and this Jesuit priest, Father Joseph Marmion, I don't know if people always understand the difference between the different orders. They hear Father Joseph Marmion and they presume he died 2 years later. Were you aware of the similarity of the name before this,
well,
Alexis?
I was, by strange coincidence, when I was working at the time, I was going to the post office at some post one evening, and this chap pulled up. He struck me as being a traveller, and he actually asked me, did I know where the post office was? So I said, if you come along with me now, I'm going up. So during the course of conversation, we exchanged names, and out of the blue he said, are you anything to Father Joe?
Yeah.
I said, yes, Joe's my brother. And we spoke a few things, and the warden hadn't up. So he made reference to the fact that he was a Jesuit. I said, no, that's not my brother at all. But I thought it was strange that we should meet on the street. This man, he was from Limerick, and that mm-hmm. Father Joe Marmion at that time was working in Limerick. So that was the only reason that I knew there was another Joe Marmion in it. Now I gather from you there's a second Joe Marmion.
Yeah, and there's an Abbot Marmion, there's a Thomas Marmion, there's a Father Joseph Marmion, S.J. There's an Alexis. It's to do with Don Columba Marmion.
That's right, yeah.
You're aware of him?
I am indeed aware of him. Actually, I was out for his beatification.
He was beatified.
Yeah.
And were you there because you were related to Don Columba? Or
yes.
You just had the same name?
Yes. I had a relative known who was in correspondence with my brother Joe, and they seemed to be tracing it up, and had looked forward to going out to the beatification, but unfortunately they didn't live to see that day.
But the bizarre thing, Dom Columba Marmion, who was beatified, he and the Archbishop of Dublin was there for the beatification. He was born Joseph Marmion in Dublin's North Inner City in 1858.
Yeah.
He was baptised in St. Paul's and Aran Quay, where Michael Collins is buried from, and I think Eamon de Valera was married from. He was educated at Belvedere College and admitted to Holy Cross College, Clonliffe. Now, he precedes the Father Joseph Marmion, that we're not your brother. The one that, according to his order, was a paedophile. He precedes him by 100 years, but it's a bizarre coincidence of names. That's serendipity in the world we live in, yeah. And the fact that the Joseph Marmion that was beatified, Dom Columba Marmion, as he became known, he was educated in Belvedere, and from the inner city of Dublin. Do you know anything of his story? Are you related to him, Alexis?
I couldn't say, to be be honest about it, but the Mermaid name made its way down to the west of Ireland from North Meath, I think. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was North Meath. There's quite a number of Mermaids around Louth as well, Dundalk, and Drogheda.
And do you remember your brother becoming a priest, Alexis?
I do, of course. He was ordained in 1962, the 10th of June, for the Diocese of Montana.
And were you younger or older?
I was younger.
And you, what age were you when he went off?
When he went to Montana?
Yeah.
I was 24, it's a...
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And did you know that this priest... Sorry, is it even proper to call this other man a priest, Father Joseph Marmion, who the Jesuits now say abused students in Beverly and other locations associated with the Jesuit order as well, that man, he died suddenly as well, but he died suddenly the night before in Rome that Dom Marmion, also called Born Joseph Marmion, was about to be beatified, and that was in September the 3rd, 2000.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, no.
Wow.
No. So there was a lot of coincidence in between them, and that's why I was a little bit concerned about
The connections are, I know it's all serendipity, but apparently I'm told now that Dom Columba Marmion, who was beatified, would be a granduncle of the paedophile priest, Father Joseph Marmion.
Well, I couldn't go that
far. I know,
close.
It's turning into a... Yeah. But it's to given on a reminder to the reason the Jesuits have named this man is they're encouraging any of his victims to come forward, and we would do the same. But and where is your brother buried, Alexis?
He's buried in the cathedral grounds in Loughrea.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did he get on in his ministry?
Oh, he enjoyed it. We're lucky enough. Lucky is probably isn't the word to say, but. As I said, he said Mass on that Sunday, 10 o'clock Mass, and died after the Mass. The following Thursday, he was due to go back to Montana. Mm. So there was some little bit of satisfaction in the fact that we had him at home. And we were with them
when he passed.
When he passed, yeah.
Okay, now, Jane, Joe at RT.ie, and again, I'm very conscious of not getting mixed up. But Jane is in Wexford. Jane, you want to talk about the Father Joseph Marmion, that's the abuser, according to the Jesuit order.
Yes, Joe. I worked in the public hospital in St. Vincent's, and I used to go to Mass across the corridor to the private hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the most charismatic figure I've ever met.
Okay.
A huge personality, as a huge in stature. And I was having my tea yesterday evening when I heard the news, and I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah,
and it just goes to show how you can be taken in by somebody, you know, and people wouldn't have believed years ago, but now, thank God, people do believe.
And when you say you went to... Are you talking about the old St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin?
Yeah, the old... The public hospital.
Was that in St. Stephen's Green?
No. It was in the Donnybrook there.
Okay. And the private hospital is now a separate building, I think.
Yes.
But now,
yes.
Then it wasn't. Okay.
No.
So did you ever get talking to him, Jane?
Oh yeah. He was the funniest, most charismatic figure, and huge in stature. And when we'd be at Mass, the reason why we all like going, because it was only 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And also, he'd tell you to sit down, now you're all working hard when the gospel would be on. Oh, and you felt he had the most beautiful short sermon, and you would leave Mass with a lovely feeling.
Well, that's what Mass is all about.
I can't, I'm actually in shock.
And did you get any idea what his interests were? Was he into
No, he traveled a lot, and he loved Greece.
He
was in France, and very well spoken. And I can believe now why people didn't believe about this paedophilia years ago, because they would have known somebody like him. But I certainly believe it now. You know, I'm shocked, absolutely in shock, Joe. that he could be taken in by such a, you know, that's what he was doing behind all this facade.
But I think one of the things that shocked people as well, Jane, in fairness and in credit to the Jesuits, that they have gone public on this.
Yes.
That they have actually said a deceased member of our congregation was an abuser.
Yes, but they should have, it's a bit later to be coming forward. They should have, I don't know now. I was really reading Tom Dorley's on the paper about him. Now, he didn't give the name. But, to think that you could be taken in by him, really, you know, to think that he was even cruel to those boys.
Yeah, that was Tom Dorley in last Sunday's Mail on Sunday.
Yes,
And he was the springboard for that article was Mr. McLean is now in prison for abusing children in Terenure College and beyond pupils. And he was saying Belvedere had its own abuser.
Yes.
I've been told as well now that he was into music.
Oh, yes. He spoke a couple of languages as well. And, he'd even coming out, I remember there was a consultant coming with me out from the Mass, and he said, you know, I come over here if I'm on duty on a Sunday, especially to listen to him. He was so, you know, and it was because we were on duty as well that it was so short a sermon, but you felt you had been to Mass, you felt good. He put you in good humour coming out from Mass.
And the music angle is interesting as well. And you say he was larger than life.
Oh, yeah,
he
was very big in stature and his personality. Mm. And
was he very Dublin or very...
No, very, very well-spoken accent.
That's what I mean, very Dublin.
Yeah. We call him a D4 accent.
Oh, D4. Oh, a Dart accent before there was a Dart accent. Oh, I meant Dublin working class accent, which is a real Dublin. But as you say, he was very well read, larger than life.
Oh, yes.
He was the first person to translate from German the production of The Beggar Student, an operetta in three parts, and that was performed in Ireland. He did the translation, and he arranged the music.
Yes. He would have been a very highly intelligent man, and very, very down to earth as well. Like, everybody liked him.
Mm.
But I'm shocked, actually, Joe, to think that what he was doing behind all this, you know.
And Jane, would he, if you mind me asking this, would he have had access to children in St. Vincent's Hospital?
No.
There's no children, okay.
No.
Okay,
thank God. No, thank God for that.
Okay.
But I'm just in shock, Joe, and it's a pity that he's not alive today to justice be done, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still in shock actually over it.
Okay, Jane, thanks indeed.
And thank you, Joe.
Thank you for all the work
you
did.
Bye-bye.
All the work
you
did in the hospital too. Alexis, were you surprised, because it is to their credit, I think. Now, it will emerge about when they knew, maybe it won't be fully in credit, but that, like, given that we were used to religious orders like the Norbertines in Cavan, shielding Brendan Smith, and indeed times in the Dublin Diocese back in the, no, not too far back, when priests would be moved around different parishes after being accused of abusing children. It is interesting that the religious order has come clean and said this one of our members was, this is his name, now as it happens it's the same name as your brother, also a priest, deceased. But it is interesting that the religious order have come up front on this.
And it's refreshing too, like, that religious orders are coming up and standing up to their responsibilities. As you said, it's a change in ways.
Okay. Do you think you might be related to the beatified priest rather than the abusive priest?
Well, I suppose there's so few of them armies around the place.
Okay.
We're probably all related.
Okay. Thanks indeed. That's Alexis Marmion, and we're glad to be of help in clarifying that for the family and reminding people to contact 1 in 4, or indeed the Jesuit Order have set up a contact line as well if you have been affected by the actions of Father Patrick Marmion, Father Joseph Marmion, a Jesuit priest. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Oh, at RT.ie. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened?
My precious baby pups of 7 weeks old. Cardigan corgis, top quality breeding, were taken from under my nose last night.
Oh, God. How many of them, Mary?
There were six of them. Sorry, six. Three dogs, three bitches, and they're cardigan corgis.
And how old are they?
They're 7 weeks today.
And what happened, do you think?
Well, if we knew that, Joe,
All
I can say is they were... I normally go out for their last feed, really called a nightcap, about 10-ish. And only last week they went out to their puppy house. They were in the utility room with me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And their last feed is usually about 10 or thereabouts. I went out with it, came back into the kitchen. It took 20 steps it takes to get from my kitchen to the pup's house. Came back into the kitchen to prepare their morning feed, and I heard what I would call hurt squealing. Now, when pups play, it can be a bit rough, but it's baby play, rough. And I dropped the towel from my hand, I was drying my hands, and out the back door, straight off, and never thinking for 1 minute that anything could be amiss, knowing full well that there'd be no potential hazards around any of the dogs for fear of hurting themselves. And I'm rather distraught now, so I'm a bit shaky speaking.
Take your time.
And I just saw their enclosure gate open and the gate into their house opened. And they were out for their little bit of... Normally they have a quick little poo and they're gone in for the night.
Okay.
Now, on a wet night, it wouldn't happen. And if it did, you'd have an umbrella sheltering the pups.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter about yourself. Because we'll say committed dog people, next to their children is their pups.
Yeah.
And they would never be a crop, especially if you show dogs and exhibit and be fortunate enough to qualify for crufts and everything like that. And I am 51 years in dogs.
Wow.
So I can tell you...
And who would have known that these pups were recently born? Like, have you advertised them for sale, or do you...
No, not at all. Within the clubs, you would place them, and you would only breed for the showing for yourself.
Okay.
And... because I'm a bit of a dinosaur, I don't ever put anything up. Even my winnings, I don't put up on Facebook or anything to that effect. And nobody, in fact, one or two of my neighbours, quite a lot of my neighbours, would be in the country, about 4.5 miles outside Kilkenny City. They would hardly know I'd have pups.
Okay.
In fact, they've been coming to the door most of the morning, even been unaware.
Because
you really don't advertise your treasures, do you?
And did you phone the Gardaí?
Oh, yes. I phoned my neighbours immediately and they were all around with flash lamps just in case, in the off chance, something got away. I can only imagine when I heard the squealing that they were being stuffed into some kind of a bag. And it is impossible to get into my place. You'd have to get 7 feet of a gate. I have alarms, which of course wouldn't be on when you're in the house.
Of course, yeah.
The kennels would be alarmed. And we'll say the real desolation part of it is that they were probably somewhere down the garden, it would be fairly long, watching me feeding them.
Yeah.
But when you think, not 20 steps to the pup house,
And did you hear a van or a car drive away, Mary?
No, not a thing. One of my neighbours thinks they may have come in from about a field away and got in some way at the back. But they were down there with my sons this morning And it's the only place would be, if this is possible, getting in and sinking into, we'd say, I won't call it a quagmire, but it's where all the dead grass would be stored until one of the farmers empties it for
me.
Yeah. It would be impossible. If you were locked in my garden, you'd be found there in the morning. Because there isn't a way out unless you're very agile. And as I said, nobody. Only those within the club and my immediate family.
And given, you say you're 51 years, you show at Crofts, have you got security, Mary?
Oh, I have, yes, yeah.
Okay.
But they're not on the cameras.
They're not, okay.
One of my sons and removed last night.
And are the cardigan and corgis, are they valuable?
Oh, they would be, but they'll be much more valuable to you, to yourself.
Yeah.
Than they would. They're not a marketable breed.
Why not?
Probably because people have bought in to paying double the price for mixy uppy pups and making new breeds and everything like that. That fools the public because they think pedigree dogs are more expensive, but they're probably half the price of the. And I would use the word because a dog is a dog. A mongrel.
Yeah.
And I said a makey-uppy breed because they bought into it thinking that they're going to have something new and special, and they are still only mongrels. And only mongrels to me means they are a dog and they deserve the same treatment as your cross champion.
And is the mother in the kennel with them at the moment?
No, not at 7 weeks. They had only gone out from the utility room.
Right.
And into the most beautiful, cushy little house for them.
And their mother was in another
adjoining house. And I had the other two cardigans, and Stella is the mother, Morgan is the father.
Okay.
And they were my first litter, I'd say, in about 14 years. It's a long time since I... But we need to get back into the show ring because we won't have shows this year. We didn't last year. For obvious reasons. And it was my way of getting my new puppies in.
Mm.
As it is, we'd all be geriatrics showing veterans by the time we get back.
And had you intended to keep the seven,
six
puppies?
No, I would run on two.
You'd keep two?
Yeah, just to run them on to see whether to be a dog or a bitch. You see, dog show people don't stop showing. They just die, first of all, and then they decide to stop showing.
Okay.
We would be so committed.
Okay.
And I have to pay tribute to all of the people.
Yeah.
They have worked Trojan work since this morning on Facebook and the ports and the guards. The support I've had is astonishing.
Oh. And they'd be too young to be chipped, would they?
Well, they were going this weekend for vaccination and chipping.
Oh, for God's sake.
But you know, if they were chipped, these articles just cut the chip out.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They'd gouge into the skin of the poor puppy.
That's it. Can you imagine?
I can't imagine.
Can you imagine what they might do to their children if they do that to pups? Because that's where it starts, with the animals.
And in the area, given your network and your connections... Mary, have there been other thefts of puppies?
Well, not in my immediate area.
Right.
But I know in other districts, different parts, it is rampant, stealing pups. And I haven't, because of, let's put it like this, with my age group, I'm a great-grandmother, so you can get a rough idea.
Okay.
I haven't, if I leave the house to go to the post office, I ring somebody, Judy. My faithful Judy, who comes down here and sits on guard because we know that the stealing is rampant. And unfortunately, on guard without a Kalashnikov rifle.
Well, you don't.
And I don't mean it. That is the distraughtness in me speaking because I can't stop shaking. And those precious little darlings, they haven't had one second discomfort since the day they were born.
Of course, yeah.
And all I can think of now is what hole are they in?
Well,
what's happening to them? They'll be so scared and so frightened. And I didn't go to bed. I stayed up all night. My sons wanted to stay. Mm. I was determined they went home because they wouldn't sleep. I'd be rambling the house all night, which I did, with two massive, big, whopping great hot Jemsons that hadn't the slightest effect on me.
Okay.
And I still can't believe it, and I'm actually shaking like an aspen leaf. I just can't stop shaking. And the reason I sat up with the Jemisons, and I have to say, stupidly enough, two carving knives out of the drawer in case they came back for the adults.
They won't come back.
Oh.
They won't come back. The couriers wanted, or the articles as you called them, that stole the gorgeous puppies. Had you got the puppies named?
The application for the registration came yesterday morning in the post from the Kennel Club, because you couldn't register, you see, until after the microchipping.
Yeah, okay.
So I was all ready for that.
And had you got the two in mind that you were going to keep?
Well, you're watching them every hour of every day.
Yeah.
So you get what I call a bit, don't see the timber for the forest.
Okay.
And you change your mind, you're looking at them and watching them. And really, you have a cast in your eye watching them. And you're saying, oh, like that dog, and that bitch, these two now, we'll run these on. And then they turn and look at you a different way.
Yeah, with their big puppy eyes.
And their massive, big, round cardigan feet, like a big, big, fat cat. They're very, very strong feet.
Oh, is that where the name comes from?
From Cardiganshire. There would be the drover, the pastoral dog, bringing the small Welsh cattle down to the fairs. And they always had, these were in the days before cattle marts.
Okay.
And they would start at about 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. And when the cart would stop, or the pony and trap or whatever they were using to travel with, the dogs always, you'll always find a cardigan wanting to go in under the table. And they went in there. They're the most loyal, devoted dog. They're the dog of my heart. I don't have to tell you, the dog of my heart is all I can call them.
And they're a corgi, so they're a small dog with short legs.
Well, you see, there are two varieties. There's the Pembroke corgi, which would be, we say, very popular with the Queen having the Pembrokes.
Okay.
Cardigans are what was called a Welsh yard long, which was 40 inches.
Okay.
From nose to tail. They always had their brush, which they carry in line, like a shepherd. And they weigh, now an adult would weigh 17, 18 kilos, but they are still a small, strong, very, very sturdy dog.
Okay.
Larger head, larger body, and a very different front to the Pembroke. They have a wraparound front.
Yeah.
Whereas we say the Pembroke would have a dead straight front. And the Cardigan's feet turn out ever so slightly, not like a Queen Anne, but they've got the wraparound with the lovely deep chest. And when you put your hand between the two front legs, you can feel the chest dropping into your hand like an egg.
Okay.
The pointed end of an egg.
Okay.
And this wonderful top line and the most gorgeous head expression. As I say, a larger dog. They've got large ears, which they use to pick up the sounds of the cattle from the ground. And they hood the ears to hear.
Okay.
We'd say if there was a stampeding herd, and they could turn a stampeding herd.
But they're a very small dog.
They are, yes.
A very low slung down. I've all the wrong language. You have the brilliant canine language. They're a very small, low dog. How would they be?
Well, they'd be very low to the ground. Yes.
But how would they?
If you think about it, the larger cattle, the larger animal, that we'd say the cattle, the dogs that follow them, like the Pembroke or the Cardigan, they're smaller because if the cattle kick, it only goes over the back of the dog. They never kick the dog. And if you you think then, for sheep, it's a bigger dog.
Yeah.
And sheep are smaller than cattle, and yet you've got the bigger dog like a Border Collie.
And you're saying the Cardian, your Cardian Corgi, they would be used for cattle?
Well, obviously not so much now. A lot of dogs over the years wouldn't be used for the same thing. But they would still use them in Cardiganshire. And farmers in Pembrokeshire would still use their Pembrokes to bring in and out the cows.
Now, we've put up, we'll tweet the photographs on at Joe Liveline and at RTE Liveline if people want. They're absolutely gorgeous puppies. They're beautiful.
And they come in slightly different colours. The Pembroke would be, we'll say, tricolour in red and white. The Cardigans are various shades of brindle and brindle point tri. They can also be red. And, of course, they can also be blue merle, but that's a different idea. These are not blue merles. And they were only beginning. One pup had 2 ears up. And another one was rising, the other one. But I know with my niece, Tara Vagnell, who's responsible for all of this and all the support, she shows Bijans herself. And she has done all the Facebook. Again, as I said, I am a dinosaur on all these things.
Oh, you're great. Don't be worried about that.
And if and when they're found, I still have such great hope. I only cleaned the run this morning. I wouldn't touch the house, and their food is still on the kitchen.
Okay, so you're living in hope. We'll put it out there. The Gardaí know they're gorgeous, gorgeous puppies, beautiful animals, and hopefully. Have you other dogs at the minute?
No, just Cardigan Corgis.
But have you other? Okay, the six that are gone missing.
I have Stella, the mother.
Stella, yeah, okay.
Stella's the mother, Morgan is the father. Now, they have their show names, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
And then I have another lady called Lynx.
Okay. And will the mother miss the puppies at this stage?
Not really. They start dodging them at about 6 weeks.
Oh, do they, yeah?
Yeah, running away from them because they don't need... The dogs dry up themselves. It's a natural progression. Okay. They don't need anything to dry the milk.
And where's Morgan? Where's the father gone? He's probably drinking in the Marble Bar in Kilkenny at the moment. Where's the father gone? Is he feckless? Where's he gone?
As usual, looking up adoringly at me. And I will use my feet as pillows for his head.
Ah, you're very good. What a beautiful sign. A beautiful side of humanity is people's love of pets, Mary.
Yes.
And I know it's reciprocated as well. It's so important. And animals.
But you know, this is where it starts. This is where the genuine person... You will find the genuine person is, you put the animals before the humans because the humans can speak up for themselves.
Yeah.
The animals have no defence, only what we give them.
Okay. Okay. Mary, we'll put it out there and we'll ask other people to try and be of course, there's six of them, but the problem is that they might be separated at this stage and that's your big nightmare. How they're being treated. Okay, Mary, you mind yourself in the meantime. That's Mary Butler from Kilkenny, and all your friends and neighbours and family are with you in this, Mary. So hopefully that you'll get them back fairly soon. Thanks indeed.
The hope is the last thing to die, isn't it? We have to keep the hope there.
Yeah, well said, on so many levels. Yeah, thanks indeed. Thanks, that's Mary Butler in Kilkenny. Back to Father Joseph Marmion, who's been named by the Jesuits as an abuser. Sarah, you knew him as well.
I did, Joe, yes. I often entertained him in my house. Mm. But, and, you know, it was like the lady said, he was a very charismatic man. But we got to know him because of my husband, late husband. He used to be in the shows with him at school.
The musical shows.
The musical shows. And so that was how he got to know him better. And later on then, like when we were married, he often used to visit us.
Mm-hmm.
But
when did you hear this news?
I heard it last night. My daughter sent me a message, and I'm just shocked. Really, I am so shocked and so sad.
Mm.
You know, it was a dreadful shock to me. And there's nobody like anybody now that would be with in my husband's year. I don't know anybody that's left that I could ring up and say, what did you know about him? Did you know anything about this or that, you know? But the one thing I heard that other gentleman, and he was saying about a dom, and I remember he used to speak of dom, you know, and I thought he was a relation of his, but that man wasn't sure. Sure he wasn't?
That man was a Marmion, was also born Joseph Marmion as well, but he was born in 1858.
Yeah.
But he was beatified. He's Dom Columba Marmion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he used to speak of him. And he also had a sister, Jo. She was a nun. And I remember once he came and he had been to Greece. Mm-hmm. And she was exhumed. And he, you know, the way he told the story, and they all around the grave waiting for the coffin to come up, and she was perfect when they opened the coffin. So I think she was to be beatified, or, you know, whatever they do first before they become saints or whatever.
And you never suspected anything, Sarah?
No. No, and I'm wondering, did my late husband ever suspect anything?
Yeah.
Do you know? And of course he had...
Now, there are difficulties arising now in that he's been named, though he's dead. So there's no one around. If there is a defence, which there isn't a defence, but if he denied all this, there's no one around to deny it. But
No. I mean, that's the sad thing for me. Now, I'm not taking it from the people that were abused. I don't know if my
husband was
ever, you know, but...
And did your husband know him through Belvedere?
No, through...
The music?
The Crescent.
Okay, that's another music group, is it?
And, and he did all the shows with them. So, I mean, he had all the boys there with him then as well, you know. It was... Well, if they, you know, it is, there are people that have been abused by him, you know, but he kind of had a group that he would have been very close to, so he would have had the chance, you know, to do whatever, with them.
We had Jane earlier on who worked with him in St. Vincent. She said he was larger than life.
Yes, he was.
Jolly and...
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
You know, and so like it's very sad. I think it's very, very sad.
Okay, it's very sad for the victims as well. That's your point.
Gosh,
I know that's what you're saying.
The whole thing. The whole thing is so sad.
Okay.
You know the whole thing.
And as I say, the family of Father Joseph Marmion from the west of Ireland want to say they've nothing to do with Father Joseph Marmion, the Jesuit. Okay, Sarah, thanks indeed.
Thank you for having me on. Okay, bye-bye.
Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Last Friday on Liveline, when Shay contacted us on his way, he was plotting his planning his return to school on Monday and the journey, and he discovered these Go Vegan posters on his route, and among others they say there's one of his sheep being stabbed with a pretty serious kitchen knife in the neck, and the slogan is "A terrified child dying for your dinner." And we, Go Vegan, who pay for these ads, said they would come on. They're available now. Sandra Higgins, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Who is the child that's dying for your dinner?
Well, most of the animals that we use, particularly as food, are killed at a very
young
age.
Who is the child that's dying for your dinner?
Obviously, the lamb who's being killed.
The lamb isn't a child.
Oh, the lamb is a child to the mother who gave birth to
The lamb isn't a child in the normal meaning of the word.
It would be standard farm practice to refer to mothers, fathers, sons and daughters.
As the lamb as a child?
Yeah. I always find it interesting, actually, Joe, to hear people, but they're surprised when they hear another animal being described as a child or a mother or a father or a son or a daughter. And yet we've no problem referring to, say, a chick at Easter as a baby chick or a monkey as a mother or a baby monkey. It's only the species that we use that we find that we have this defence mechanism, and we find it objectionable because it reminds us that what we're doing is wrong. when we eat animal products, when we wear animal clothing, animals who are only a few months old, sometimes a few weeks old, are killed unnecessarily for us. And I think it makes us uncomfortable, and that's why...
Speak for yourself. You know what I mean? I'm not saying whether I'm uncomfortable or not, but you're saying it makes you uncomfortable.
No, it makes the reason that people are defensive about calling another animal a child or a mother is because it reminds them that other animals have relationships the same as we do. They give birth, they look after their children, they have brothers and sisters, they have friends, they have emotions, they have feelings the same as we do. And that makes them uncomfortable when they're reminded that we kill them unnecessarily.
Okay. But you still send over the phrase, this billboard says a terrified child. You say I'm referring to a lamb.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I'm reminding people that when we farm them, when we kill them, they have feelings the same as we do. I mean, that's a scientific fact. We're all animals. They're animals. We're animals. We all have a brain and a central nervous system.
And what do you think of people who do eat meat?
Well, so it's not so much what I think of them as I know that they lack information.
But do you think they're child killers?
What I'm saying is that they're not aware of the fact that other animals have feelings and that they don't want to die and that we have no need to kill them. So that the role of our ads is to remind people, because this is something that they generally don't think of. I know I was horrified when I realised it. And I couldn't believe that I had got to this stage.
So what do you think of people who eat children?
It's irrelevant what I think of them. I used to be one of them until just a few years ago. It's a lack of information that people are entitled to.
Peter Whelan is a well-known pig farmer. Peter, you're a child killer.
I'm a cannibal now, Joe, am I?
Well, you talk to Sandra. I'm not getting involved.
Yeah, I know. Listen, Sandra, first of all, I think I like Sandra's, her affection for life, and I'd actually concur with some of what she says insofar as, nobody goes out to kill, another animal cruelly or...
Yeah, but Peter, this argument is not about veganism or vegetarian. This argument is about those posters.
Yes,
that's
right,
what
okay.
And we'll stick to that. I'm not. Yeah, we've done that vegan argument till I'm blue in the face.
Yeah,
and we'll do it again. I'm sure. But this argument on this occasion is about those ads, and the ad shows a sheep being stabbed in the neck, screaming, obviously, and it says in massive print, "A terrified child dying for your dinner."
Yeah, well, that language is totally unacceptable and wrong, and it's misleading. First of all, we all know, and you're quite correct, the terminology for a young sheep is a lamb. If she wanted to use an analogy, she probably would have been better off using goats, because the young goat is called a kid, if she wants to go down that terrifying route, frightening children in schools. But I wanted to just make the point that I have people coming into me now, and people are saying their children are being terrified by these ugly, frightening posters and the language and the way it's being. I've no problem with Sandra, as I say, whatever, like with the veganism, that's grand. The market I do has a vegan stall and we get on great and we respect each other. But I do have a problem with targeting, young children on their way to school, seeing these, thinking that we're all murderers, farmers are murderers. The kid is the wrong language to use.
Okay, Sandra, you say it's about education. Why do you have to use such shock tactics? That's what's upsetting people.
Well, Joe, I think you hit the nail on the head yourself in the last 2 days when you said it's not about these images or photographs. It's the act. And if we're not happy for a representation on the street of what happens on farms and in slaughterhouses, then we should be thinking about maybe we should change our way of life and not eat animal products.
But have other campaigns failed that aren't as graphic and as provocative?
I don't know of another campaign like ours at the moment. So they're just fat. They're just, what we're putting up there is factual. If we were to actually go into a slaughterhouse and take a photograph, it would be
a lot more upset.
You
say a terrified child dying for your dinner. People reading that would think of a child in, God forbid, the Congo or the Yemen or whatever, suffering.
We're not
building a children's hospital for lambs.
It reminds them of the fact that we're not the only species who have children. Other animals have children.
But I'm saying, why have you gone down the road of the shock tactics? Have the other tactics not worked? Education.
What's shocking is not my... It's like what you said in the last few days, Joe. It's, you know, if it's true about the photograph of the guy sitting on the horse, the dead horse, then it's also true of our ads. Our ads are not the problem. It's the fact, the action underlying them, which is that humans are using other animals, even though we have no nutritional needs.
Okay, I bring other people in before the break. Lucy, what do you think of the ads?
Hiya, Joe. I suppose it's quite shocking. I thought maybe it wasn't the best one of the Go Vegan ads I'd seen because it referred to a child. But it's kind of interesting that farmer who was on there suggested that maybe she should have used a goat, because then they could legitimately have said a kid. So would people have been upset then? I don't know. I mean, Joe, one of the things that for me is that I am now vegan. At the great old age of 59. I was vegetarian for years, and mainly because my oldest son actually said to me one day, Mom, why do we eat animals? And
why do we need these ads? These shocking
ads on our public streets,
for children to see and...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's for everyone to see. And it was my children who woke me up. They opened my eyes.
Yeah, but it was your child who spoke to you over the dinner table or whatever and said, Mom, why...
Yeah, because he suddenly realised what we were eating was, you know, basically a dead animal. And he said to me, why do we do it? And I said, well, it's habit and it's culture and I'm used to it.
So why can't that happen for other families? Why can't that happen for other families?
Because sometimes people don't have open conversations. I mean, I know my son, when he eventually went and told his friends about... Now, this was the second one. So the first one, we said, okay, we'll try vegetarianism, and we went that route because of my other son. And then my younger son said to me, he actually told his friends, that he was much younger at the time when he went vegetarian, because obviously the whole family were vegetarian. So he's about 7. And he went down to his friend's house and he said, you know, that was a live chicken, and his friend didn't know that.
Yeah, okay, but that's...
So we don't educate our children, Joe. We just kind of let them, we put the food on their plates and we tell them this is lovely and these are chicken nuggets and this is ham and this is beef. And they have no idea. We tell, you know, our slaughterhouses...
But they do ask, and children... I think you've, to use that phrase again, hit the nail on the head, because I think a lot of older people who become vegans are... influenced by their children's arguments.
Not by
obnoxious posters.
Well, I don't think it's obnoxious, Joe. It's just, I mean, as I say, what I really would find obnoxious, and I've never been inside one, is a slaughterhouse. Or what's really interesting in that conversation you had with that lady there about her dogs and her little puppies who were taken away, and she was describing how scared they were, and someone had taken them in a bag, and, you know, she didn't know, they were frightened. And at the moment, at the weekend, there were 4 truckloads of calves, probably 15 days old.
But we'd have to... other people, you know? Stay
and
with us, Lucy. Stay,
yeah, well.
Okay. But we're talking about the ads back after this. 51551 Marchand.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Doing it till Friday, but we're still getting lots of calls saying my relative, or I'm over 85 and I've no word about when I'm getting the vaccination, even though the minister said yesterday everyone over 85 will be done by the weekend, which is later than most of us believe. But anyway, we're here all week, so we'll find out more. PJ English, you're listening to this debate. The debate is about this poster from Go Vegan World. It says, a terrified child dying for your dinner. The child in question is a lamb which is being stabbed in the neck by a butcher's knife. PJ, your point, please.
Thank you, Joe. I didn't see the ad, but I helped Sandra on your program.
Yeah.
And she nearly kind of insinuated that we were savages, the people that eat meat. That, do you know, I farm in South Tipperary, and I farm calf to beef. Mm-hmm. I buy the calf.
Okay.
The better that calf is looked after, the better we will get results in 2 years' time when that animal is fit to kill.
And what do you think of Go Vegan referring to young animals as children?
Well, I'm farming, as I say, all my life, and I've never regarded my animals or calves as children. Do you know, even it don't make a difference what age you slaughter an animal. I don't eat veal myself, but veal is very popular all over Europe. And but I wouldn't go that. But I'm just saying that people go back to the biblical times, and prodigal son and all that. Our Lord said, "Kill the fattest calf, and we'll all celebrate for the return of the prodigal son." So it's back that length of time.
What do you think of that, Sandra, briefly? Our Lord didn't say kill the fatted child, it said kill the fatted calf.
Well, you know, to use the length of time or a religion to justify something that's completely indefensible doesn't make any sense. There are a lot of things in the Bible, like beat your children and beat your wife, and, you know, that we know that. We know it's unjust.
Okay, got to leave it at that. Thanks indeed. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Lisa Marie Berry produced, and Ray Darcy next.